They can be a great people, Kal-El. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 57 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that's been to hell and back. I'm Richard Gray.
And I think I'm David McVeigh again.
In this issue, we get a first look at Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., then all the latest headlines, plus our kick-ass pick of the week, Hellboy, Seeds of Destruction. This is Behind the Panels. Heart Attack and Vine. That wasn't the Tom Waits version. The Tom Waits version was the song that was playing when Hellboy was first introduced in the first movie.
Oh, I was trying to figure out the relevance of it.
But that was the Screaming Jay Hawkins cover because it was a little bit faster and more appropriate for the start of the
Screaming.
Show.
I love Screaming Jay. As soon as it's playing, I'm going, why is he playing Screaming Jay Hawkins?
But of course, it was played because we are doing Hellboy this week. And Hellboy is a character that's been around for quite some time, and we thought we knew him, but maybe we didn't.
Maybe not. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show.
But first of all, before we head into that, let's go back and do something that we do every week, and let's hit up a little bit of the vintage clip of the week. Oops. That was the vintage beep of the week. That was it.
Excellent. I really enjoyed that.
Actually,
one.
Actually, no, the Wayback Machine's playing up today, so let's just try and fire it up again.
Amazing. An armed assault by female phantoms. Almost beyond belief.
And in our house, too. What on earth will Bruce and Dick say when they get home?
Get home? Mr. Wayne is away?
Oh, yes, he's off in the wilds with a millionaire's hunting club, and my nephew Dick is on a school holiday.
Maybe a blessing, Mrs. Cooper. With any luck, we'll have this outrage wrapped up by the time they return. Luck spelled Kate Crusaders.
Oh, what a wonderful idea. Why didn't I think of them?
Police headquarters. Switchboard, Commissioner Gordon here. Plug me in at once into the hotline bat phone circuit.
I regret to say, sir, Batman and Robin are not at present available.
What? Oh, surely you must be jesting.
Alas, sir, I am not. Batman is enjoying one of his infrequent vacations.
Oh. Catastrophic. Unprecedented. Batman and Robin not available. You know what this means, don't you?
If you're thinking what I'm afraid you're thinking.
Precisely, Chief O'Hara. The moment we've dreaded for years has arrived. This time, we're going to have to solve a case ourselves.
That's exactly what I was thinking all the way through. I'm going, wow, you mean you'll actually have to be police people?
So when the Wayback Machine finally did work, that was, of course, from Batman, the series, this 1960s series. I think that was in the last couple, it might have been the last season. It was an episode called The Devil's Fingers, which is why I chose it this week. And it was a point where they'd basically given up being silly, campy fun, and just started to be completely surreal and stupid.
Yeah.
And it is an episode notable for the absence.
I have to ask, though. Yeah. Did the actress who is playing Mrs. Cooper, the aunt, Do you think she was testing the censorship? Because she really enunciated dick every time.
It's funny, actually, speaking of enunciating dick, the whole scene is played out with a pianist in the...
you said pianist.
Wait for it. With the pianist in the room. And it's played by Liberace, who's like hitting on this on the aunt all the way through it. And it's like, we're looking at it now going, yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, she did live with what we think may have been two gay men under her roof the whole
That's
time.
That's true. And had no idea.
She was blind to everything because he's entering Batman.
You mean...
I'm entering Batman.
That would
Shall
be
we go into the men's locker room?
That would be the one. I forgot you stitched those two together.
Oh, yeah. All right, David. Before we descend into season 3 Batman silliness, let's take a look back at what we've been reading in the last week.
Well, looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
David, how many lines have you been reading between this week, bitch?
Not a huge number because I haven't actually seen Star Trek twice this week. So.
As have I. So.
But yeah, the Star Trek twice.
Hear that, America? We've seen Star Trek
twice. And of course, there was also Arrow this week and a whole bunch of other stuff. But I would like to point out in Power Girls, not Power Girl, World's Finest, number 12, Power Girls comic book, it actually debuts... her real costume finally.
Ah.
So we saw her get this costume now in the last Supergirl we talked about last week. In the latest World's Finest, she finally puts it on and she finally goes out.
So the boob window's back?
The boob window is back. The gloves, the blue boots, the whole bit. She's back to being Power Girl.
Feminists again. Everywhere rejoice.
Yes. The other thing I was wanting to mention very quickly is something I haven't read yet, but I'm fascinated. I'm going to read it this week and I'll report back. Iron Man 258.1 came out.
Right. Now, this is the follow-up. This is like the similar to the X-Men Forever thing, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. So basically in 1990, creators, what is it?
David Michelinie
and Bob Layton wrote the Armor Wars, basically.
Yeah.
The comic book was taken over by other people, Armor Wars 2 and so forth. Now, suddenly, they have come back to continue their story, just like Claremont did with X-Men Forever. So it's a very strange thing that Marvel, is doing at the moment, where they're going, let's go back to that, you know.
It's funny. It's a coincidence that came out because I just went back and bought the Marvel Omnibus edition of that run.
Yeah,
which I got a massive discount on Free Comic Book Day. So that was. It's interesting that they've just the time. Obviously, you know, Iron Man films out in theaters. They want to do,
of course,
like, but you know, cashing in on whatever they can. But,
so apparently, this is actually getting interesting reviews, though. So I will be very interested to read more of this.
It was kind of a light week the last week for me. And I did a lot of catching up. I went back and caught up on all of the Justice League and Green Lantern that I hadn't caught up on yet. One of the books that did come out last week that I put a little review up for on the site behindthepanels.net was a new Image series called Chin Music.
Oh, okay.
Now, this one's it's just the first issue.
I thought I was
out.
Up to date on everything. I haven't heard of this one.
This is only issue one's just come out. Chin Music is probably notable for its creators. It's written by Steve Niles, who did 30 Days of Night, and Tony Harris, who did a massive run on Ex Machina, the title refers to, you know, basically, let's quit the talk and start the fighting.
Mm-hmm.
It's, pardon me, that's a, it gets off to a very solid start. It's a busy one nonetheless, but it basically takes place in Prohibition era Chicago. But there's undead, there's supernatural stuff there, there's bloody skeletons with bullets with incantations carved into them. It's a real the artwork is almost like those first, you know, 10-20 issues of Sandman. It's kind of got that sort of vibe
beautiful.
To it. That's got the kind of that Sam Keith Mike Dringenberg stuff that they did for the first couple of 20 issues or so. But at other times, it's like a Chuck Jones cartoon, and this character's bouncing off pyramids and landing somewhere else. It's a very strange book. Love the ideas. Want to know what happens, whether this can sustain a series. you know.
I will be very curious to catch up with this. I will have a look at this and talk to you about it next week.
There's a few other ones that are out there. Just give a quick shout out to The Private Eye, number 2, which is the Brian K. Vaughan, Marcos Martin creator-owned thing that they put up online essentially for free. It's like a pay-what-you-want kind of deal. They got enough money off the first one to put issue 2 up, so that's up there now. Everybody go check out Panel Syndicate website just to download this thing. It is magnificent. The artwork just pops. And you can get this for next to nothing.
I've got issue 1. I haven't got issue 2 yet. So,
yeah, but give them a couple of dollars because really they're going to do 10 issues and they're just basically paying for it as they go.
That's a fantastic idea. So it really
just
is.
Just do it. You know, just go and buy it. Don't be cheap. Go and buy the stuff. David, is there anything else you've been watching? The other thing that I'll just mention is that I have caught up with Arrow, the TV series. I'm up to date for that. And next week, as we'll say at the end of the show, because the final episode is out this week.
Yeah, we must warn you, next issue's pick is going to be very spoiler heavy. So to our Australian listeners, you may need to postpone listening to next week's show for a little while because we'll be giving away stuff that happens in the series.
Yeah, we've been getting iTunes US for this stuff, so it's been... very lucky to have access to that, but there will be spoilers and all. But please feel free to tune in next week. We'll be talking a lot about Green Arrow, which is my favorite thing. Now, I think we should probably move right along because we've got a few news headlines this week. Let's get started with apologies in advance if this is too loud. We've had complaints before. but let's just hit it up anyway. Oops, wrong one.
Hey, we are just having soundboard issues today.
Right, and center. I don't know my ones from my two. I should mention that I did a capture today. I was trying to log into our site, and we've got the capture on there to verify that we're human. I got the mathematical equation wrong.
Okay, just so if you don't go to behindthepanels.net, you're not going. Oh, actually, if you're not logging in, you're not going to know. When you log into the admin panel, you have to solve a mathematical equation proving that you are human. But these are really simple. They're really simple mathematical equations.
And for some reason, I just could not get it right. And the next one they gave me was like, what's 4 + 4? And I'm like, that one I know. the point being, I couldn't get my 1 and my 2 around the right way on my keyboard. I might be slightly dyslexic at this point. So let's just try this button.
What a scoop!
Marvel's Iron Man 3 is poised to break $1 billion globally, having already taken $950 million as of the week beginning 13th of May 2013. It's the highest grossing film set at Christmas since Home Alone.
DC has cancelled 3 more titles in August, Dial H, Demon Knights, and Legion of Superheroes. I guess that makes it the new 45?
Something like that, but you can't do math. DC also announced that they would also release a DCU versus Masters of the Universe series. Are you kidding? You heard right, Superman versus He-Man. Good Lord.
Still on DC, the surprising announcement that Grant Morrison would team with Yannick Paquette for an all-new graphic novel, Wonder Woman Earth 1.
Interesting. The Archie Comics ongoing series Kevin Keller was announced as this year's winner for Outstanding Comic Book at the GLAAD Media Awards. When asked for comment,
Archie and Veronica blush.
Australia's Gestalt Comics announced that Tom Taylor and Colin Wilson's The Example is getting a Polish-language edition, expanding Australia's comic presence in Europe. Yay, Oz Comics!
Yay! Adult Swim has announced a Robot Chicken DC Special 2 is on the way.
Oh, yes! Meanwhile, Marvel is sending their own comic book, Big Hero 6, to Walt Disney Studios Animation for the first big-screen animated adaptation of one of their own comics, another one by Chris Claremont.
Very good. Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series has been officially picked up for series. Yay! We need a cheer on the soundboard. They teased their first look this week. Let's have a listen.
For years, the truth was hidden. People from other times, other worlds, heroes. But now we know. They're among us.
does SHIELD stand for, Agent Ward?
Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
And what does that mean to you?
It means someone really wanted our initials to spell out SHIELD. I'm clearance level 6. I know that Agent Coulson was killed in action before the Battle of New York.
Welcome to level 7.
What is that?
That's a superhero, Agent Ward. We worked the case as SHIELD hasn't classified. The strange, the unknown. It's not just spy versus spy anymore. The whole world's in on the action.
You're in danger.
What do you mean, danger?
SHIELD.
I should carry a shield?
SHIELD. Government. Scary men in dark suits who come after guys like you.
Is that who I think it is?
She's just the pilot.
Melinda May is just the pilot. Fitzsimmons.
Fitz.
Simmons. I'm engineering. She's biochem.
It's not of this earth. We will rise against those who shield us from the truth. And nothing can stop us in the... Hey.
There are two ways we can do this.
Oh, it's one of them the easy way.
No.
No. Not exactly a team player.
We're not exactly a team, but we're in a position to do some good. I've seen giants. The good ones are not heroes because of what they have. It's what they do with it. We're not the only ones interested in people with powers. Only take the shot if you have to.
We have a couple of hours at most. There's no way that we could possibly...
Don't ever tell me there's no way. Don't touch Lola.
Okay, funny story. When I first heard that trailer, I heard the name Melinda Mays. And I actually thought, that name is really familiar to me. Why is the name Melinda Mays really familiar? It occurred to me after doing an image search and a search on Google that don't go into a Melinda Mays because she's a Playboy playmate. And if you've got Safe Search turned off, you'll see all sorts of things. And then it occurred to me that I think the reason why it sounds familiar is because the actress who played the alien in Life Force is Matilda May.
Ah.
And I think that's why it's been eating at me, is the fact that her name
is
Matilda.
So it's normally associated with nudity is what you're telling me.
I think so. I think that name is just a nudity name.
So let's hold out hope for Ming-Na Wen in...
Look, it looks awesome.
Yeah, it looks all right. Look, the scope of this thing has really impressed me. And one of the things I pointed out when I was writing a little bit about the trailer on the site was that in the first image we got out, you could see in the stills that they were in California because there's a Californian flag in the background. But in the extended trailer, they're in Paris, they're in an airfield. This looks massive.
Well, they've got a helicarrier. They can go anywhere they want.
You don't see the helicarrier in there, so I don't think they have access. Level 7 doesn't have access to the helicarrier.
Although I'm still wondering whether or not Lola flies.
Yes. but we'll never find out because we've been told...
Don't touch Lola.
There you go. But look, I think I'm still curious to know. Speculation time. Let's run rife with speculation because we have lots of time at this point.
Well, first couple of frames in that trailer, is that Luke Cage?
Is that Luke Cage jumping out of the window? I think it might be. With the return... And my son and I were talking about this today. If they're going to go street level Marvel... Mm. Just let's not forget, they just got Daredevil back, which brings back into the fold Kingpin, it brings back Elektra, it brings back The Hand, it brings back Bullseye. We also brought back, and most importantly for street level, we brought back The Punisher.
I wonder if they're going to be going along like a Heroes for Hire.
I'm wondering, will we introduce the Heroes for Hire people? Who's the girl with the, she's got a robotic arm. She's one of the leader of the current Heroes for Hire. I forget what her name is. Misty something.
Yeah.
Misty, whatever her name is.
I'll have to look it up, yeah.
But she features heavily in Civil War and the Heroes for Hire. So,
Misty Knight.
Misty Knight, thank you, yeah. I think this could be the series we've been wanting.
Because they've been talking about the Black Panther and all that sort of stuff. So they could do all those kind of street level ones because they've got Punisher back now.
Not
they've
huge
got...
special effects involved in some of these guys, you know?
So, I mean, look, you know, and from some of the viral stuff we've been seeing, and you see some of that, the that viral site that they're looking at that, that evidently the hot girl's a member of. In there, and I love that. I'm a little worried that they've sort of cast for looks, but I mean, this is Joss Whedon, so probably not.
Well, and also, you know, I mean, it is ABC TV; they probably did cast for looks, but we've got Joss Whedon controlling it, so hopefully.
The thing is, at the very least, you've got Joss Whedon and at least two of his regulars in there. Mm. So you've got Clark Gregg, and you've got J. August Richards.
Yeah.
So, and Ming-Na Wen's no slouch either. She's been in a lot of great films. So we're talking about a very capable...
And we were discussing in the car as well. That I mean, there is no reason why we can't have cameos by Iron Man or the Hulk because the Hulk is CG and voiced by Lou Ferrigno. I'm sure he's not doing anything on
and
his
And Iron Man's in a mask.
And Iron Man is CG.
Yeah.
You know, essentially, you know, even if you had to get a Robert Downey Jr. impersonator to do a voice, you could do that. You know? Why not? Yeah, so there's no reason why we can't. So there's actually a glimpse of Iron Man in that trailer. You see him fly by in the sky. You know, it's like, why not? We could do that. You know, and it's like, and you've also got, as I say, you've got Luke Cage, and if you've got Luke Cage, that means Iron Fist isn't far away. Danny Rand isn't far away.
Yeah,
you know?
I wonder. I mean, look, you know, the great thing about this series isn't that it is tied to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I think that's one of the cleverest things that Marvel have done. With this whole venture is actually tying it through, but you can still jump on at any point. Mm. Like any one of the, with the exception of, I mean, even the Avengers, which is the team film, you could watch that independently of the others. You didn't get as much out of it, of course, but you could watch it independently. So I think this will be a separate thing and it'll carve out its own identity, but it won't, but it'll reference the universe. And I wonder then, because it starts up, probably just before Thor comes out in cinemas.
We were discussing that today as well. We were saying there's got to be a sweeps week episode where they're going to do some sort of tie-in between these two things.
So, you know, let's just see where they go. So I'm so excited about this because let's think about it. This fall season, we're going to have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yep.
We're going to have the second season of Arrow.
Yep.
The fourth season of Walking Dead.
Yep.
This is going to be a comic book geek TV heaven. This is what we've been waiting for years for.
There's also been a rumor kicking around in Hollywood at the moment. I heard about this a couple of days ago that they're actually thinking about rebooting Heroes.
I've heard about it. They're going to reboot Heroes, and it's going to be like sort of what they're doing with Arrested Development, which also had a trailer out this week. It's kind of making it exclusively available on Netflix.
Let's not forget, as bad as Heroes got, season one Heroes
was
awesome.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Apparently, it's going to be available. I think it's just like through Amazon or something. They're going to make it available exclusively through there. It's a bit of a golden age for geek television at the moment. Between that and, you know, your other crossover hits like Game of Thrones and whatnot, but still, it's we're certainly going to have a lot to watch this fall season. And I'll say now that I will be at New York Comic Con in October, where I'm hoping that if there hasn't already screened, that they'll be showing it there. What they'll also be showing is apparently at San Diego Comic Con. They'll be showing, and we didn't mention this in the show notes, was that they've confirmed that there'll be a Peggy Carter one-shot starring Hayley Atwell that'll ultimately end up on the Captain America Winter Soldier DVD and Blu-ray, but they're going to debut it at San Diego Comic-Con.
Very nice.
So very much, it's going to be so much stuff coming out in the next year.
Because we're running just a little bit ahead of time, do you just want to talk very, very briefly about we just experienced Teen Titans Go?
Yeah, look, we have very different opinions on this, and I think it kind of goes back to David, that I've got far more of a sense of humor than you, and you're just a
and I'm just a Grinch,
and you're just a humorless old Grinch. Now, look, Teen Titans Go is kind of a relaunch. I disagree, but it's a relaunch of the other Teen Titans Go series, which in itself was a cutesified version of a chibified version of the Teen Titans. This has sort of taken it further and made it a bit more of a Powerpuff Girls Adventure Time kind of thing, which I think is one of its greatest strengths. But David, not so much.
No, look, and there's a couple of moments where I smiled or I chuckled because the lines are kind of funny and so forth, but I was never a huge fan of the Teen Titans cartoon that came before this. And I'm a big Teen Titans fan from the new Teen Titans era. So this is, we're talking mid-80s, right? We're talking, you know, where Raven was introduced and all this sort of stuff. And I really like that and so forth. And when the Teen Titans cartoon came out, I wasn't really keen on it because it was just a little bit too cutesy and a little bit too silly for me and so forth. I equate the new Teen Titans Go, though, as being like, let's take a nice sugary cream-filled bun that is not good for you and already too sweet and makes your teeth hurt and inject more sugar into it.
Well, let's just play a little bit of the dialogue from that and let's just see what people think of it.
Seriously, you have no idea what a wiener my dad can be.
Dude, you got it twisted. Your old man straight up's a bomb.
Why are you talking like that? How are you talking like that?
Your dad gave her the power to speak like an Earth teen.
Yeah.
And he gave me the power to turn into anything I want. Look.
And yet you choose to be a beanbag.
Yeah, so...
yeah, so you kind of made my point for me, actually.
Well, but, I mean, the funny thing is, and I think this is where audience is going to be divided, that is exactly why I love the show. I love that wacky, irreverent humor. I love that it just bounces off the walls. And I think that's really important because it's kind of like what Kelly Sue was saying in her interviews. Like, you know, Kelly Sue DeConnick, who we did an interview with this week, and you can also find that on the site and on the iTunes stream.
And where would that be? That'd be behind the
panels.net. Of course it would be, David. I don't know if I've mentioned that website before. But the thing is, it's about the thing. It's about finding new audiences. And this is like, it's not a new audience to comic book adaptations, not a new audience to comic book shows. It's about finding whole new audiences. And this takes us into this crossover area. And I don't know if you've noticed, there's this things like My Little Pony aren't being watched just by kids. They're being watched by this massive crossover audience. The whole cult of Lauren Faust around that, Foster's Home for Imaginary People, and there was the Powerpuff Girls, and even stuff like Adventure Time has got this kind of weird crossover audience vibe to it. And I think this is what this is going for. Now, you don't like it because you had a version of Teen Titans that you liked, but they still exist.
Sure, but the funny thing I have here is that if we're trying to bring people into comic books, this is not going to work, because what's going to happen is this new audience is going to go, oh, Teen Titans Go rocks. They're going to go down to the comic book store and they're going to go, give me a Teen Titans comic book, and they're going to pick it up and they're going to go, what the hell's this?
And that's the thing. They won't necessarily, because let's not forget, DC is owned by Warner, who is a multimedia empire.
Yeah.
So they've got to have their fingers in TV and internet and DVD and Blu-ray and cinema and music. This series will send people off to their websites where they'll sign up for the interactive online games, and it'll have them buying the computer game adaptations and the DVDs and all the t-shirts and all the stuff that goes along with it. That's fine. They can keep pulling money in from that and then funnel it into great stuff like
the new 52.
Well, and this is the thing. This is my point to you before. I think you've made my point. There is nothing in that to me that is more, any more disrespectful or off the wall than some of the shit that's come out in the new 52.
That's true. No, look, I don't hold it against anybody who wants to watch it. It's just not my cup of tea.
No, I think we should fight here on this show.
No, I just it's not my cup of tea.
No, look,
I look at it in an era where we can produce The Dark Knight Returns with that quality level.
But this is my point. You can produce The Dark Knight Returns, and that's great because that's your meal, right? But occasionally you need a little bit of dessert, you know?
Yeah, but meal of the Teen Titans.
David, I think you should go back and listen to what you just said.
Yeah, maybe you should. I don't think that worked. I don't think that came out of my mouth quite right.
Or I think on that point where you're eating out the Teen Titans.
Oh!
We should, in the sense that you're making a meal of them, we should probably move on to the pick of the week.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
First created in 1993 for San Diego Comic-Con Comics number 2, Hellboy was originally pitched to DC, who were reluctant to feature a story that would involve hell. Summoned in the last days of the Second World War, Hellboy is raised by the United States Army and the Bureau for Paranormal Research and Defense, or BPRD. Along with an amphibian humanoid called Abe Sapien, Liz Sherman, a young pyrokinetic, and a menagerie of colleagues, the world's greatest paranormal investigator has fought everyone from Nazis to Hellspawn and frogs. But it all began with his first miniseries. This is Hellboy, Seeds of Destruction.
Nicely done, Richard. I like these new introductions, I have to say.
It saves us a lot of explaining later on.
So for those who are just joining us late, we're now giving our introductions at the beginning of our review. So
yeah, rather than somewhere in the beginning, middle, and end.
We better fill in what people are looking about.
So we used to get to this point where it's like we were three quarters away through the viewers. Have we mentioned what this comic's about yet?
And can I also say thank you to Mr. Danny Elfman for our backing?
Yes, it was good to get him in on such short notice.
I know, he was very, very kind.
It's nice to fly him. Look, we'll see. Next week, we'll see if we can get someone bigger in.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we'll see. Do you think John Williams is available?
Maybe. I don't think he can't be doing it. He's going to be retired by now, right?
Yeah, probably. Now, as that beautiful voice said in the introduction, this is Hellboy Seed of Destruction, which is the first Hellboy miniseries. He did appear originally in San Diego Comic-Con Comics number 2. That was his first appearance. But
and if you actually buy the current trade of the Seed of Destruction,
it appears in the back.
They have the two short Hellboy stories that were in the back.
Which is terrific. But this Seed of Destruction is the first proper Hellboy book. But it was written by, in some ways, it's not the first proper Hellboy book until you get to Wake the Devil, because that's one that's entirely created by Mike Mignola. But this Seed of Destruction was it was a story by Mike Mignola, written by John Byrne, and illustrated beautifully by Mike Mignola.
Now, when you say written by John Byrne, I'm curious about that, because it actually says script by John Byrne, but it makes me wonder how much of the plotting and everything was actually laid out by Mignola.
Yeah, I think majority of it was.
Because they actually say, because one of the things I really love is if you actually look at the Comic-Con books that are actually at the back of this, it actually has the credits. And back there, not in the main book, but back there, it actually says, where is it? It's a beautiful credit where it says, by Mike Mignola and John Byrne along for the ride, or something like that.
The early stories were conceived and drawn by Mignola with a script by John Byrne. So I think that actually means that he created, plotted, but the dialogue and the actual narrative is John Byrne.
Script and emotional support by.
So that's great, and I think that explains a lot in a lot of ways, because one of the things that you commented to me on the way over here was that this is immediately, if you've were introduced to Hellboy by the movies, which we both were, this is a very different vibe. And even though some of the plot elements, including his summoning during the Second World War and the kind of the Nazi face mask guy, and you know, Abe Sapien and Liz Sherman, they're all there, but it's slightly different, and the beat's slightly different, and the humor that Ron Perlman brings to it is largely absent from this first volume.
Although, interestingly enough, when Hellboy does talk, there are passages in this book where you sit there and you hear Ron Perlman's voice.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, that's kind of what I was expecting. And something I was speaking to you about in the car on the way over here to the studio tonight, when I was saying, I'm trying to say this in a diplomatic way, because I don't want the fanboys of Hellboy to turn around and hate me or send hate mail because you're going, you just don't get it and blah, blah, blah. But there is part of me at this point, because this is my only Hellboy introduction, where I actually, at this point, still, this is so hard to say without worrying I'm going to offend somebody.
So David, I've girded my loins. Let's do it.
I think I like the film better. And it's like, it's one of those things where I go, it's just that the pacing of the film and the characterizations in the film and so forth. That being said, this is a wonderful book.
See, this is why I bought the giant library size edition, David, so I can hit you over the head with it on behalf of Hellboy fans everywhere for that horrible, horrible. No, actually, it's funny because I'm not going to say I thought, you know, get into the
no,
whole.
No, actually, I shouldn't say it's better. I enjoyed it more.
And I'm not going to get into that whole thing because, you know, you can get the hate mail, not me. No, but
so, look, I got asbestos underwear on Flame On people, all right? So
the thing is, though, and I think that's true. I think the way you phrased it, enjoy it more, because by the time the Hellboy films came around, there were a lot more comics on the world. This is 1993. The first Hellboy film wasn't until, what, the early 2000s?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, by that stage, I think the film was being informed by a whole lot more Hellboy comics, agreed, even though the story was based largely on this one.
Which is why I said I want to read more, absolutely.
But it's also based on the insane genius that is Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah.
even though Mignola wrote, you know, the script as well.
So, and he was heavily involved in
it.
Yeah.
So he, you know, I think it is a combination of things. This first book's really interesting. I mean, like, the first thing that will jump out to anybody's reading this, and any Hellboy book at all that Mignola's involved in, is the artwork.
I mean, agreed.
Look, honestly, regardless of whether this is your type of story or what have you, two things about this artwork. One, it's bloody amazing. Like, it is beautiful. It's a very shadow heavy art, which really gives you that sense of Edgar Allan Poe macabre to
and
it.
Blacker than black.
Blacker
blacks.
Than black. I've got this. You've got a recent reprint in a trade paperback. I've got this beautiful library edition. I think there's five or six of those.
Yeah, just
out
show
so
off
far.
Some more. Go on.
What I'm saying is, if you want to get an amazing version of this art, you get this library edition because it's an oversized book. The art is crisp and clear, and it's these beautiful reproductions
of
it.
You need a table to read it.
I was trying to struggle here with the microphone and the book, so I put that down for the moment. But, I mean, it is a beautiful recreation of it. But that's been so influential, the colouring as well. And I don't want to not credit the colourist on this, so I'm quickly looking up his name, which is Mark Chiarello. The colouring in this... is by Mark Chiarello is so influential, because you look at so many books now, things like Fatale or Hawkeye or New Dead Wardians that we did recently, or any of these books that have got that kind of slightly, you know, only use a handful of colours, slightly faded, lots of heavy on the black. Certainly Fatale and Hawkeye use that kind of lighting as well. Just, you know, this book has influenced all that, and it really all does come back to that. Our good friend J.P. Colongi, who just published Ninjin's Nightmares, is the first person to say he one of his biggest influences is Mike Mignola and this Hellboy run.
Yes,
you know, this book has been so influential on a generation of artists and writers, because these sorts of stories and artwork are just, you know, dime a dozen now, but it's beautiful. And I love it. I love
and
that.
Interestingly enough, when you look at the Hellboy films, you can see that artwork translated very heavily into the films. I mean, he's kept that production aesthetic, that production design right into the films. And in fact, it makes me think that Guillermo del Toro was actually more inspired by the pictures than he was the story, because he actually went and,
you know, and I get a feeling that's how Del Toro works.
Yeah.
But I mean, he is a, you know, an artist in his own right. So he's very, very visually inspired. It'll be interesting to see coming up. We're going to see the opposite that's happened, and we'll probably cover this closer to the date when Pacific Rim comes out. A prequel comic has been written based on Pacific Rim, so it's the opposite.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. But getting back to this book, I mean, it does have a lot of the elements of that film. So if you've liked the film, it has, as I said, Hellboy being born in the Second World War, has him being taken in by the BPRD, has him being raised by an elderly mentor, and but what's absent in this first volume is there's not a real love story happening with Liz Sherman.
Well, Liz Sherman's a very different
character. Yeah, you don't get her past, her background in this volume. Abe Sapien's just kind of there. He does a lot more in the field.
And it's hinted at in this book that there may be a lot more to Abe Sapien.
Yes.
Because of a very quick cameo by another... They look like they're from outer space or something that, which all look like they're his race.
Yes.
But it's such a throwaway in the book.
Yeah, exactly, know? Right. And it's a big epic book, and it's the kind of thing that lends itself to that major Hollywood production. I mean, it is someone, you know, most basic of stories you could possibly imagine, going right back to very old school macabre, which is someone wants to summon something and destroy the world. Real, you know, big bearded man who's, you know, just wants to take over stuff and be very powerful.
Just because he wants to see it burn.
You know, absolutely. You know, classic villain stuff. Hellboy, who's just, you know, best investigator, just do another day at the office, really, you know.
And gone is that subplot that they created for the films, which is where they're trying to keep his identity a secret and stuff like that. He just wanders out in open.
Yeah.
It's like when they go to see the woman at the house. He just walks in the door as he is. You know, it's like, and there doesn't seem to be any conscious effort to keep him hidden.
No, and the thing is, he was in the comic universe, he was granted official humanity by, you know, the government at one point, and he is known. He works with the BPRD so much that he's just, and in international organizations, he's just known.
Yeah.
You know, so it's that kind of thing. That's the reality of that world. And that's what I like about this book, is that it's full of bizarre, weird creatures, but
including frogs.
and that's just the reality. And it just goes with it. Doesn't feel the need to explain it, why they're there.
Well, there's no explanation for him at all. They go in to question that woman, and she doesn't go, "Eek, what are you?"
Yeah.
She just goes, "Well, Mr. Boy."
Yeah. You know, we spoke on the phone. Yes, we did, Mr. Boy. You know, it's a kind of, and that's what I love about it. I love that casual casual reaction to weirdness. And, you know, and I think that's what sells this book. If they'd had to go into, as a first volume as well, that this could have been filled with lengthy explanations and origin story this, and he got here because of this, that, and the other.
And, you know, from my horrible statements about the movie before, this book is beautifully written. The prose in it is gorgeous. And I don't know how much of that is Mignola, how much of that is Byrne, who knows, but it is gorgeous. Gorgeous. There's that one story that I was talking to you about beforehand. There's a story. It's like an old American folktale, basically.
I've put it up here now.
You've got it there?
Yeah.
About a man sending his dog to God to basically say he wants to beg for afterlife, and the dog being distracted by soup. And it's just beautiful.
And I love it here. It says, "The dog went off and followed his nose towards God. He was soon distracted by the smell of soup and followed his hunger towards the source. Leaning in close to watch it boil, dog was content and forgot his mission. Seeing that dog was lost, frog took it upon himself to go to God and tell him that man did not want to live again. If man were to be reborn, thought frog, he would soon muddy the rivers and destroy the birthplaces of frogs. Dog finally arrived to tell God man's message. Leaning low, he crooned man's need for rebirth into the song of his howl. God was touched by the devotion of dog for man. But God granted the frog's wish," because he got there first.
I love that.
And it's beautiful moments like that. It's just kind of taking this sort of reverential approach to myth and legend, then crapping on it occasionally.
Throwing it at its head.
And I think that's just the thing to do. Both the film and the comic have something in common, which is almost reverential and almost encyclopedic knowledge both Mignola and Del Toro had for myth and legend.
Yeah.
They're both absolute nuts for it. They love that thing, and apparently when they were making the second film, they were going to create adapt one of the stories from the comics, but they thought, no, we both know so much, let's just create our own myth out of this and go see where we go from there.
And they introduced the troll town
and all that
and
sort of
the
stuff.
Golden Army, and it's magnificent.
It's actually funny, arguably the second film is far more of a Del Toro film than it is a Hellboy book.
True.
Sorry, because it is very much that look and feel. In fact, it was the fact that he went off and did Pan's Labyrinth in between gave him the clout to come back and do another Hellboy movie the way he wanted to.
Yeah,
because
the first Hellboy wasn't that financially successful.
No,
but Pan's Labyrinth was.
Yeah, and it was an Oscar winner, I think, if not a nominee.
I think it won Best Foreign Language.
Yeah, so look, you know, he went off and proved that he could create a weird film and for it to be accessible and popular and award-winning.
And there is a lot of production design in Hellboy 2, especially with the Angel of Death creature at the end, which is very similar to some of the imagery in Pan's Labyrinth. So you can really see his inspiration there. But, I mean, back to this book, though. I mean, it's interesting the turns of events, because, like, in this book, Hellboy turns out to be not such an important character. In the film version of it, you know, his stone hand is the key, and the bad wizard guy is basically, what's his name, Rasputin, is basically needs Hellboy because he needs that arm to be able to unlock the gates of hell and blah, blah, blah. And in this, as soon as Liz Sherman turns up, it's like, oh, she's got lots of power, I'll use her instead.
Yeah. And it's like, kind of like, you know, originally I needed you.
Yeah, but now I've got her.
Got her instead. And you know, that's what I great, and I love that it does twist and turn like this. I mean, it's not a as I said, it's a very traditional kind of horror, you know, end of the world bringing about kind of story, but it takes you to places you don't expect. Just like that story with the frog is a great example
exactly.
of that. Exactly. That, you know, you think you know exactly how that's going to end, but somebody else got there first.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the kind of irreverent attitude that Mignola and Byrne have in this book. And I love it. I think, you know, this story, as I said, was the basis for the film. So people who like the film aren't going to have too much trouble coming to this. Unlike, as you said, people who watch the Teen Titans Go series.
Yeah. just be prepared that it's not the film.
But it's not the film. Yeah. But I think
that's a good thing.
That is a good thing because I think film and comics should exist independently. And I mean, there's been so few cases of somebody trying to adapt a book as it was written and then create that completely on the screen. I mean, you know, something like Spider-Man 2 certainly took a lot of... you know, guidance from Amazing Spider-Man 50, where he hung up his tights, and Spider-Man 3, and the first Amazing Spider-Man film took stuff from the death of, you know, Captain Stacy and all that kind of thing. Spoilers, people. but you know, very few comics have been adapted directly from comic to screen, with the exception of, you know, Watchmen. Which tried to do the narrative as it was a thing. But even that had to take its liberties just because of the scope of the thing.
Well, and
so,
they completely altered the ending because what works in print wasn't going to work on screen.
Thing. I mean, you know, Watchmen was written to be unfilmable. Hmm. But, you know, I think this is one of the ones that has such a cinematic look on page and it's been conceived in such a cinematic way that's why a lot of it... I was reading some of those early pages in here when they're summoning... when they're first arriving in the ruins and they're summoning... it was effectively Hellboy and his discovery, and that's almost a direct, almost
yeah,
seems
that's
the
almost
same.
The same, yeah.
And certainly, you know, when he's first introduced in the film, he's surrounded by cats listening to Tom Waits, you know, doing weights.
Yeah,
that's not and smoking a cigar. That's not the character that you get.
He liked Twinkies or something, didn't he?
Yeah, Babe Ruth. What do you call it?
Baby Ruth.
Yeah. So, yeah, no,
none of that's in this book.
No. So it's you know, very different beats, but that's great. But I think this book is so cinematic. And it's very, very rare that you get a comic that is so cinematic but also so completely a comic book as well.
Mm-hmm.
There is no other format quite like the comic book, but there's no other artwork quite like Mignola's. So you're completely sucked in visually to this, even if the story doesn't get engaged.
It is gorgeous to look at. I was talking to Richard about it before, and I'm not entire. I don't know the process behind it, but I would not be surprised to find out that this was actually painted on black paper. You know,
the black
is so black.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you don't. I mean, this is the inkiest book.
Yeah,
you're likely to find.
Hello.
Oh. that's how black it is.
It's so black it causes that to happen.
It causes music to spontaneously burst out of David's iMac. but look, the thing is, I mean...
We're sound challenged tonight. Did you know that?
Yeah, we are a little sound challenged. Sound dilemmas are something that afflict 9 out of 10 men. premature sound just going off when we least expect it. Please give generously. Head it to behindthepanels.net. Click on the Cafe Press merchandise link on the right-hand side. All that money will go directly to our premature problems.
Oh, dear. I'm going to go out and buy Wake the Devil. And I also want to buy The Chained Coffin and The Right Hand of Doom. I think that's going to get me seriously hooked into this whole Hellboy world.
If you get the library edition has also got Wake the Devil in it. So Seed of Destruction and Wake the Devil in the library edition. In volume 2, you also get Almost Colossus. You get The Chained Coffin and others, Almost Colossus, as well as other early stories which came out in between Seed of Destruction and Wake the Devil, which are The Wolves of St. August and The Corpse and the Iron Shoes.
He really has done a lot of them, hasn't he?
Yeah, like there's a lot. There's, I think, something like at least 57 individual issues, and there's the whole lot of miniseries and things as well. Including, you know, and this spun off into BPRD and
novels, apparently.
And novels, and there's an Abe Sapien series now. There is a this Hellboy in Hell is currently running. You know, it's which is the main Hellboy title at the moment.
Can I tell you at the back of this trade edition?
Oh, the pinups.
They've got the pinups, and this one's by Frank Miller. And I just
thought, that's gorgeous.
Frank Miller's Hellboy is just...
It's just basically black and red. With like a typical...
It's Hellboy in Sin City is what it is. It's just fantastic. Some great pinups back here. I love it also if you read the Comic-Con short stories, the ones that were like the lead-ins to it all. He actually says in the introduction, he says, the following stories are the first Hellboy stories ever produced, done to promote the miniseries and introduce the character. First ran in San Diego Comic-Con Comics number 2, given away at the 1993 San Diego Comic-Con. But he goes on to say, I wasn't much concerned with plot, but I did learn a couple of things. Hellboy looks better with a coat, and I like to draw gorillas with big bolts sticking out of their necks. I thought that just sums up Mike Mignola's sense of humor, I think.
What's really interesting, the introduction to the second volume, Wake the Devil, is actually written by Alan Moore. The introduction to the first volume is also written by somebody of note. Robert Block.
Robert Block, yeah.
Who did Psycho.
Which is a great introduction because he talks about the fact that he had absolutely no respect for comic books.
Mm.
And he basically thought, well, you know, what the hell? And then, of course... Just changed his mind.
Because what he actually says about it, he said, this is far from the pop art of the Andy Warhol world, the inane imagery of the drug culture. The creative approach found in Hellboy is newly evolving art form of its own, addressed and attuned to today. Besides, it's a killer read. And what Alan Moore goes on to say in his introduction to Wake the Devil, and, you know, Alan Moore is someone who's very critical of other writers and artists sometimes. So for him to heap this amount of praise... I'm struggling with this giant library edition.
It's a very big book.
It might be bigger than my head, which most books are. But he said, Hellboy is a gem in one of considerable... No, I won't do that. Hellboy is a gem, one of considerable size and surprising luster. Well, it's obviously a gem that has been mined from that immeasurably rich seam first excavated by the late Jack Kirby. It is in the skillful cutting and the setting of the stone that we can see Mignola's sharp contemporary sensibilities at work. To label Hellboy as retro work would be to drastically misunderstand it. This is a clear and modern voice, not merely some ventriloquial seance echo from beyond the grave. Now, apart from proving that Alan Moore's a bit of a tosser...
I think we knew that part already.
He said, Hellboy is a passport to a corner of funny book heaven you may never want to leave, enter and enjoy. Now, I don't always like everything that Alan Moore writes, but I'll agree 100% with that.
Agreed.
And I think the fact that two writers of such note looked at this funny book, as Alan Moore put it, and gave it such high praise is more than we could ever say. So if you're interested in starting with Hellboy, start with this, Seeds of Destruction.
It'll leave you wanting
and
more.
And we're definitely going to head up to Wake the Devil, which we might come back and do at a later episode. Now, because we're rapidly running out of time, David, fire up the girl from Ipanema because we're going to do a little bit of feedback.
All right, here she comes.
Thanks, David. For feedback this week, because we didn't have any formal feedback, I thought I'd go and have a look at some of the search terms that have led people to behindthepanels.net. Now, I don't know what you people are doing on Google or how you're coming to find us, but...
They might be looking up Belinda Mays.
Let's just have a listen. Comic erotic Batman.
Cool.
Batman sex comics. Batman sex Robin comics.
Can I just ask, what are we putting in our tags?
I don't know. These Iron Man sitting on a couch.
I think I know where that comes from.
Police bribery and sexual video.
Pardon?
Western sex comics artist, Green Arrow porn.
Green Arrow porn. All
now,
right.
The next one disturbs me on so many levels.
I think you want Green Arrow porn.
Yeah, I think
you?
I do. Yeah. I probably wrote that in an article once. This one really disturbs me. It's not funny at all. Cool Holocaust drawings. How people got to our site based on that?
Mouse.
Really?
I don't know about the cool part, but Holocaust drawings.
Comic,
I don't know, maybe.
Comic latex sex. Okay, here's one for you. Girls of Batman and Robin nude.
I want to read that.
And finally, we don't think we can help you on this one. How to last infinite in sex.
have superpowers.
Now, if you found your way to the behindthepanels.net and started listening to this podcast based on that search term, you probably realize we're not that kind of show, but we can be if that's what you're interested in.
If that's really what you're looking for.
Tune in next week for How to Last Infinite in Sex.
What disturbs me, though? Listen to Uncle Dave for a minute. Yeah. What disturbs me is that these are search terms you're actually putting in.
Yeah, yeah. Someone has sat down and typed those exact phrases.
Yeah.
At some point, someone sat down and typed in police bribery and sexual video.
Well, you know, it's different strokes for different folks, I guess.
And wound up seeing Iron Man sitting on a couch.
Wow.
So
okay.
Thanks for shooting. If you've got some real feedback, send it to feedback@behindthepanels.net or hit up facebook.com/behindthepanels.
You can see it's been a slow feedback week.
Yeah, but we had so much last week that I thought this has been bugging me for a while.
That is an amazing list. I would really like to know. The bigger issue is this. If people type that in and found us, are they still listening?
Yeah, I like to think so, because we've mentioned all those search terms in this show. So therefore, they have found the right place.
I think we should tag this episode with all of that.
Let's do it. Now, David, that's almost it for another show. Next issue, we'll be doing a bit of a special episode, as we mentioned earlier, Arrow Season 1. The CW show Arrow, a show that I've clearly been loving for quite some time, and I think David has too.
Oh yeah.
I'm a big Green Arrow fan, but we're going to look through that. We're going to look through the Arrow comic, the digital comic that's gone with it, and some of them
which is now 20 something issues
in. About 23 issues in, and it's sort of like what you watch in between. I think 23, because it's been 23 episodes.
They're easy to consume.
Each one is a prequel to each episode. So we've just had issue 23, which is a prequel to episode 23.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know if they'll keep going in between the season, though. So it'd be
interesting to find out, yes.
So we'll be doing those. We'll be doing the show itself. There will be some spoilers. And we'll be playing some clips from the show as well and talking a little bit about what's worked and maybe what hasn't and what we're looking forward to hopefully seeing in later seasons. So that's next week's episode. For now, David, where can we find you?
You can find me at geekactually.com, and more importantly, you can find our merchandise at geekactually.com and behindthepanels.net just by clicking the picture with our faces on it.
And you can buy things like t-shirts and mugs, and very shortly you'll be able to find other things like pins and bumper stickers and wall clocks.
And if you are going to Supernova this year, we're going to be there. And we're going to have pins and bumper stickers on us.
That's true. We should give a big shout out to Supernova and Oz Comic Con, as well as New York Comic Con, because we'll be in attendance at all three of those. Okay, well, I'll be at the last two. Behind the panels, we'll have a presence at all of those things there, and you can find us and hit us up at those various places. But very exciting times ahead.
And if you are coming to Supernova, drop us a line. Let us know you're going to be there that we can try and catch up with
you. And look, you know, we can even talk to you there and have your comments and feature them on the show.
We're going to have a recording device or two with us.
Absolutely. David just wants to tell everybody that he's bought a new
GoPro.
But until next week, David, you go off and play with your GoPro. I'll go off and play.
One more thing we didn't mention. At David McVeigh on Twitter, and you are?
Well, I was about to say, I'll go off and play it on Twitter at DVDBits, and you can find me at behindthepanels.net, where I put all the reviews up from this show, and I also put up some reviews and news on therealbits.com.
Yes, you do. And we are going out this week with some of Danny Elfman's score for the Hellboy 2 movie. Mm-hmm. So enjoy those sounds.
Until next week, this is Behind the Panels. Along with an amphibian humanoid called Abe Sapien, Liz Sherman, a young pyrokinetic, and a menagerie of colleagues, the world's greatest paranormal investigator has fought everyone from Nazis to hellspawn.
Can you take the cat out of the room, please? Cat, go away.
Oh, dear.
You were doing so well.
I had half a line to go.
I know. As soon as I saw her jump here, I went, she's either going out the door or she's ending up on your computer.